Well, thank you very much, Darren, Chris, and all the students. Now we'd like to give you the opportunity, the audience, to ask any questions you might have. These young people are ready here to discuss with you what they're doing, the way they see the world and learning and where it's taking them. Any questions you might have, we'd be very, very happy to discuss with you. I think there's a mic in the middle there. You need to go to the mic, please.
I'm Marisa, I'm from Brazil. This is Indiana, from the University of Manitoba. And I think this eventually is a question more for the teachers than the supervisor. I find your project fascinating. But I would like to know if you could spot any drawbacks. Because recently I was teaching from here to the students in Brazil using Skype as the media, and I had a student who said, until you come back, I don't know how I'm going to cope with that because I'm not what they saw for me.
I just want to make sure I understand the question. Are there any drawbacks to students learning in some of the ways you've seen this morning?
Exactly, if you face any problems with the process. Because all you said, I find it amazing that you've managed to have wonderful results, but where there are students who eventually refuse to cooperate, or how did you cope with
sure. this?
Sure,
sure, absolutely. No, that's an excellent, you know what, I'm actually really glad you asked that. Because obviously when we're presenting at a conference titled the Pan-Canadian Forum on Literacy, we wanted to show you some of our brightest lights, and they're here. Do we have problems? Do issues come up with technology? There's the mechanical issues that come up. You work at it and we overcome it. Are there other ethical issues? Do kids publish something inappropriate online? Do kids, do we have people who visit our blogs and try to interact with our students online in ways that are perhaps inappropriate? Well, can that happen? And of course, the answer is yes. Because if you can access my blog, what stops anyone else from accessing my blog? But you gotta understand that there's a big difference between you communicating with one of my students through their class blog and communicating with them face to face. That all the interactions that happen between our students through our online presence as a classroom get filtered by us. We're aware of every communication that's made, and yes, we've been hit by spam. Yes, there was a student at a visiting school who came to one of our blogs, and the politest way to say it is was talking trash talk on one of the blogs. And that's not a bad thing. Don't make the mistake that something like this should get shut down. Because if they don't learn how to navigate these waters in an ethical and responsible way, while they're mentored by people who are responsible and looking out for them, they're going to do it on their own without that kind of support and guidance. And so in our classes, there's basically a three-pronged approach to when these sorts of things happen. Step one, tell the teacher. Step two, we'll delete it. Step three, we ignore it. I've told my students, and we've had these discussions in class, that if someone's going to look at all the wonderful stuff that you're learning online and the way you're sharing that level and that quality of work, and the only thing they can think to do is say something nasty about it, then the problem is not with you, the problem is with the person leaving the comment, and it doesn't merit a response. We delete it, we move on, and it's behind us, and it's over. And I think that's a really important lesson for kids to learn. There have also been occasions where a student has published something inappropriate online. But I'm always aware of everything that gets published on all of the online spaces that my students are involved in. And when they've done that, we've addressed it immediately, and it was a learning experience for the students. I invite you to contrast that with what happens when a student doesn't have these opportunities to get educated, to learn how to be ethical and responsible online, and instead just goes home at the end of the day and gets online and does whatever it is that they do. Young lady taking a picture of herself, revealing picture, sharing it only with her friend, who then shares it only with her boyfriend, who shares it with the entire 10th grade, and then it's all over the school. See, that's what happens when they are not part of the conversation about how to be ethical and responsible and manage yourself accordingly online. I don't know, I want my kids, and I have three. I want my kids to be mentored through something like that and understand how to deal with it. I don't want them doing this on their own. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah. I think another thing you have to look at too is every classroom, there's a spectrum of learners from low to high to uber high. And these projects allow all of them to achieve better results than if these projects weren't out there. The best students create work that you want to show off to the entire world. Good students create great work. Okay students create work that you never thought they could. And the bump on the log that's done nothing all year for you in your classroom actually does something. Everybody moves forward, and they move forward because this is just technology that they pull out of their pocket and they start thumbing in the words. It's second nature to them, all right? Everybody does better. It is probably the greatest equalizer and differentiated instruction that I've come across. It allows my greatest students to become so unbelievably unbelievable, and my students who I went, wow, you've been breathing all year. That's great. To go, oh, you actually learned some math too. Great. You know, it brings everybody to a higher level.
Thank you very much, Chris and Darren. I'm sure that our students would really like some questions directed at them. Yes, please.
To any one of the students, this is obviously not available in all of your classes. Can you compare how you feel learning in this environment with these accesses to technology compared to a typical, I hate to use the word, but a class with less accessibility in technology where lecture and note-taking tends to be the strength?
Who'd like to take that on?
Anyone, any age.
I like to think that when we use classes as well as any other form of technology, it's actually quite class specific because we can utilize technology for, say, English or mathematics as we do that. But some classes might not have a very safe transition into using technology. Because if technology just swarms in and overtakes the class, it might be too overwhelming for students to adapt. But if it's for some classes, the transition might be easier, such as how mathematics has occurred. But say for social studies, there might not be as many tools out there available to actually apply any technology to social studies as of yet. But there are many different things that we can do, but I think it just should be a slow transition as opposed to a large general change. And you have to take into account what kind of class or what subject matter is covered during that class.
Thank you very much. Gentleman at the mic.
I'm 63 years old. So I'm an immigrant. I'm a digital. And I recently arrived here. And when I encounter texting done by young people, it's a different form of language. The surface form of language is quite different than actually grammar can be quite different to me. When you're doing work on the blog at school, is the rule that you use conventional language, or can you use texting? Does it bother you not to use texting? Oh, and may not, this is what I mean. What is the advantage of texting over voicemail, over other kinds of things that are used by people of my generation? I don't understand.
that one of you girls want to take it? Karen? Karen? You're being nominated.
I guess it's easier for us to relate it because we do it all the time. Our usual grammar, but we also mix in our grammar with the texting. We know what we're talking about.
Anyone else want to add?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I should add to the texting portion. I just think that texting is very reliable and extremely convenient for a user because it transmits a message no matter how short, whether you just want to say two words, you don't want to really leave a voicemail for that or call them. If you wanted to say later tonight at 8 o'clock, if you want to watch it, then texting is more appropriate for that. It's very convenient, quick, and transmit the message any size.
I was just going to add on to the blog language that we use. I think since we're sharing with like our age group and we're sharing all the information with kids our age, it's easy to talk about, like, say it in the way we know how to say it, sort of because they're the ones that are going to be reading this for the majority of it. So if we use the language we know, they also know it, and we're so used to it, so it's just convenient for a lot of us.
Now the old fuddy-duddy comes up. The blog is a permanent record of their class, and very little texting actually transpires in the finished copy. A lot of the texting will occur in the chat boxes where they have a limited amount of 140 characters before they're cut off and they have to go right back into writing another message. So while they do use a lot of texting, there's a lot of wonderful, good old English grammar happening too.
Any other questions? This is your big chance, folks. Yes, Nessa, can you either speak really loudly or go to the microphone?
Oh, I speak loud.
Yeah, okay, use your teacher voice, right?
I just want to know if you've been able to influence any other teachers in your school.
we'll give these guys a chance first.
I just want to know if you've been able to influence any other teachers in your school. Here you call it these things.
About for the e-portfolio. It wasn't just for math, it was for all the subjects. We did large social studies, science, all those were included to a mission of Aaron, so what she did for this whole school.
And not all teachers might be blogging it, but SmartBoard is becoming a lot more prevalent in each classroom. And all teachers use it a bit differently, but they are using different softwares to teach their own subjects in their own way. But why are you looking at
that? Please join me in thanking Carol for her expertise and her passion.
Any other questions? Our students didn't get the afternoon off for nothing, you know. We have to put them to work. Although they did a great presentation, I was very impressed. There we go. Thank you.
I was just going to ask a few comments to appreciate you for giving your editing classrooms anywhere that's more work to achieve having outside of the classroom on your own.
I think more work happens in both settings, more can be accomplished. Because now, instead of writing on the board, we have pre-made slides. so we don't have to go through the rigmarole of writing all out. It's just there right away. So we can focus more on the logic and on the copying it into your notebook. And then when you go back home, you can just, if you have trouble with the problem, you publish on the blog, everybody can swarm it. It's a group effort, it's not just your own. And then if you go to the Expert Voices blog, you'll see such an enormous amount of work that was going on.
The problem of plagiarism. I know my students. I know who's writing what, and I know whether those are their words or not. When I'm teaching a kid, I'll give you an example that sends shivers of fear through your blood, the quadratic formula. There's not a whole lot you can do with the quadratic formula. It's not changing this year and next year. It's the same formula. What I'm interested in is, has the student demonstrated an understanding of the quadratic formula, and have they internalized its meaning and its interpretation and its application? And if that means that they're going to go read what some other student said, and that made it more clear to them, and they were able to internalize that understanding, then go read all the other student work you like. And imagine that, they're going to read other students' work about the quadratic formula. So as far as plagiarism goes, can it happen? Sure, it can happen. But as the teachers of these students, you know your kids, and you know what they're writing. And if it's their words, you know it. And I've approached students that I feel if they've copied something from somewhere, then I teach them how to give attribution. That's it.
For the students, I congratulate you on this incorporation of technology, and obviously Mr. Harbeck and Mr. Kay are going to be lifelong memories for you in your positive learning experiences. Now, are you guys in grade 12?
Yes.
Okay. And both you guys are grade 8?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure how this is going to relate to the grade 12s, but for the grade 8s, you're going into probably a high school next year, right? Okay, you may or may not have the opportunity to have this most awesome class to go to and to be supported by the other classes and such. What's going to be your learning future? How do you see yourself next year and the year after that? Learning math and science and social studies and English, if you don't have the same kind of technological supports as you have now, where do you see yourself going next year and the year after? Yeah.
Well, like in grade 9, I'm guessing like the math is like going to still be like kind of the same thing. So like with Mr. Harbeck's help this year, I could still go back to those new websites that taught me and like still get better marks.
Even if the teaching's not the same or anything, you can always use I've learned so many tools and methods of like looking at different things. So even if they don't teach it that way, I can always resort back to it and even put it that way if I want to, just so I can see it into the way that I'm used to doing it.
It doesn't have to be their class blogs. It can go to anyone's website. So I think Mr. Chappelle has a grade 10, 11, and 12 set. So when they go to grade 10, even if their teacher doesn't offer the whole blogging experience, they can go and search, they can find Secure Patterns logs, and they can learn the whole curriculum off that log.
So becoming lifelong learners and knowing where to find resources, how to transfer your learning from one subject area to another, using the tools that you already know. Yeah. Thank you.
Perfect what's been said. I think our bigger challenge here is not how will these kids cope in subsequent years. How do we help our teachers change the way we see instruction and learning in schools?
Well, maybe I can speak to that. That's definitely our work at Manitoba Education, Citizenship and Youth, along with our partners, the teams at each of the school divisions in Manitoba who are working to implement literacy with ICT across the curriculum. It's a gradual process, and just as the teacher said, you have to, with their students, you have to start to work with those who are willing. And that's where we're starting right now, and there are many who are willing. There are many who are like, I mean, these are our, Chris and Darren are, of course, shining lights in terms of this area, and they're leading. And if you take them up on their invitation to Google them, you'll see that they are leaders and world leaders. You saw the map that shows where people from all over the world are looking at the work that their students are doing. But we do have lots of other teachers who are, in their own ways, working on developing their students' literacy with ICT. They need support. They need time to visit these teachers, teachers like them, to talk to other teachers. And these are the kinds of opportunities we're offering, where teachers can be mentored between each other, talking with their peers and having conversations like the kinds that we've started here today. So in Manitoba, we are really moving forward on a provincial level within every school division to support teachers in developing their own personal literacy with ICT with the purpose that they can develop their students' literacy with ICT. And some of the questions that came up today, plagiarism, the safety issues and so on that these people were talking about, I'll go back to what Darren said, is I'd rather have the kids learn it in a secure, safe atmosphere, mentored and by teachers who know what they're doing, than venturing out on the World Wide Web on their own without any of this instruction. So we're working on that, and it's a gradual process. Yes?
Will there be perhaps opportunities in the summer to do a summer institute so that more of us can become more comfortable with developing blogs or wikis and the use of it, or is there any coursework in the future? It is difficult to mentor while they're also trying to teach, so I'm just thinking for future development.
You probably don't know this, but the man sitting in the orange shirt back there is one of the founders of what's called the K-12 Online Conference. It's been around for 2 years. I think it's just k12onlineconference.org. And there is so much information there. I was lucky enough to be a presenter this year at it, but everything you wanted to know and needed to know about implementing this type of pedagogy in your classroom is there. It's k12.k12onlineconference.org, and everything is there. Absolutely, from starting out with kindergarten kids to high school kids to hooking up your libraries, like absolutely everything you wanted to know. It is a resource. There are every presentation has movies and an audio track, so you can plug it into your iPod and sit on the bus and listen to it all the way to work, or go out for a run and listen to it and try not to trip over the sidewalk when something really interesting happens. So K-12 online conference.
Another question I have is in our school division, a lot of places are blocked and logged. And
For those of our students, and I have a number of them that do not have access to computers outside of the school, how accessible is the technology within the confines of the building of the school? Because our library is not open during, you know, at all hours and such. So how do you support the students that don't have computers at home?
And I think this will have to be our last question because I'm seeing the time here. Darren?
In our school division, there are two servers. There's the general server that's used by all the students, and there's a second server that this is in Winnipeg 1, that our tech will make available for the teachers through their own machines. I don't know if it's an ideal solution, but it's certainly one that works. And in our school, I always have, at the beginning of every semester, between 1 and 3 students in my classes that will come to me and say, but Mr. K, I can't get to a computer. And I say, well, that's fine. We arrange for them to have special accounts at the school. Even if they're going to be in my classroom using my computer, I'm there early in the day, so they can use it before school or at lunch or even after school as I'm doing my work. They just do their work. And what has happened every single year now for 4 years is by the sixth, often earlier, certainly by the sixth week of class, students come to me and say, it's okay, Mr. K, I figured it out. They found access somewhere else, friend's house, a relative's house, library, whatever it is. So does that speak to your question? Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being such an attentive audience, and I'd like to once again thank 2 teachers and their 6 students for sharing their perspectives with us.
You guys did an awesome job. Really, you guys were awesome. Really, really good. It was fantastic. Right. No, and thank you for giving me that opportunity. Exactly. Yes, that's great, eh? Yeah, thank you.